Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome back to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that is not constantly distracted by the internet. Today we're talking about all sorts of things. First of all, I am back. Second of all, games we're playing, including Eliza, Outer Wilds, and Fire Emblem Three Houses, which is a whole lot of fun. Then we talk a little bit about avoiding the internet and trying to focus in the age of social media and lots of Google Chrome tabs. Finally, we close things off with some off-topic talk on House of Lies, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Veronica Mars. Let's go! And we are back for another episode. I am not used to saying those words because it has been a little while, so excuse me if I am rusty. My name is Jason Schreier, and I am joined by Maddie Myers.
Hello!
And Kirk Hamilton.
Hello. Hello, Jason. It's nice to see you again. We're so glad to have you back.
Yay!
Yes. It is good to be back. The one thing that I have missed over the past 4 weeks is podcasting with you two fine
folks. The one thing? The only thing?
Pretty
That's
much.
Such an honor.
Yeah, it's nice to be the only thing about your job that you like.
It's the thing that I like most, I will say that. So you guys did a fine job without me. It was all very good stuff. I haven't had a chance to listen to all of the episodes, but I heard that some other Kotaku members represented. So
they did. We had a good time. We talked about a lot of different things, and it was fun. Though it also wasn't the same without you.
It feels like I missed a lot of big industry scandals.
Yeah,
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
I missed
there were a few.
The E3 leak. I missed a bunch of like Epic Game Store controversies.
I don't think those are going to end anytime soon.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of a perennial thing. So don't worry about that. Hopefully, no more E3 leaks, though. Hopefully, that's not going to be something that we have to talk about every day.
Not. And I saw somewhere there was some story, like headlines going around. It was one of those non-news things where it's like Kojima's Death Stranding is no longer a PlayStation exclusive because it's no longer listed as PlayStation exclusive on some storefront or something. And I'm sure that's true. Like, I'm sure it's also coming to PC, but I keep thinking and like hearing other people saying it would be so funny if that was an Epic Store exclusive. Like, imagine the internet explosion if Hideo Kojima's next game is an Epic Games Store exclusive.
I mean, given how many previously PS4 exclusive games are on the Epic Games Store, it is not out of the realm of possibility that that could happen.
Yep. Now that you've said that.
It'd be a shit show.
Ooh. How funny would that be?
Funny? Would it be funny? I don't know. Yeah,
it would be an intense explosion of anger.
But, yeah, that would be a cool week on the internet.
Well, first, as someone who gives absolutely no credence to the people complaining about the Epic Games Store, except I guess the one point that I saw that is fair is like people in other countries who say that they can't buy games on the Epic Games Store with points cards that they like need to use on Steam and whatnot. That to me is a fair complaint. But
you don't think any of the other criticisms are fair? This isn't even a topic we chose, but I think
I think the criticism is fair to be like, why haven't you guys gotten achievements or friendless or all the other things that you want from a game store? That's totally fair. But I think the internet vitriol because a developer chose to go Epic Games exclusive, I have absolutely no sympathy for like people who are getting angry at like the people behind Ooblets and stuff like that.
So I won't recap this from last week, but last week I laid out what I thought was actually a fairly good, or at least sort of interesting.
I was interested
like,
in it.
Look at just the whole like why, sort of like the some of the emotional feeling of why people combining like Fortnite and Epic and the Epic Game Store, and like why people might feel resentment toward them. But I'm not going to reiterate that here because I just did that on the previous episode. So yeah. Those are some thoughts about that go a little beyond
I
like
go
features.
To and, that, huh?
You should.
It went beyond just like what features are missing or like, and then more into just like what is the, why is it that people are
the emotional feeling, response. I guess I just also wanted to say I've been super curious about this as well because it's been a topic that Kotaku's covered a few times, and Nathan has a really good story from several weeks ago called Why People Hate the Epic Store, and he details a lot of these reasons, and he also talks about how some people are upset at the idea that they aren't going to necessarily own their games anymore, and a lot of people who used Valve just saw it as a way to like permanently own their games forever, which of course these are digital games and this isn't a new issue.
Wait, I don't understand,
but like,
that. How is
because
one different
than
the
other? If you pre-order something on Valve and then it gets taken away and suddenly is on the Epic Store, like a lot of the anger is about that, like that idea that something was supposed to be, quote unquote, supposed to be on Steam and now it suddenly isn't. And so people have this speculative fear that games that they currently have on Steam are going to be taken away from them. Like, it's sort of irrational, but that was something that Nathan was writing about
that's
that I thought was pretty interesting as well.
Mm. We should link to that in show notes. I haven't read that article. That makes sense that it's in some ways also just a reminder that none of these games are actually
like you
yours,
don't
and that's a shitty thing to be reminded of.
Anything, and it's possible that like something that's on Steam now will eventually be on the Epic Store, and maybe they'll be on both stores, but what if it's only updated on the Epic Store? Then do you have to buy it again, and how many times are you expected to buy a game? So like, I understand that anger, but obviously it's getting elevated to a level that's absurd. But anyway. Isn't a topic on this show. We haven't discussed it at all, and we won't.
I digress. See, haven't you missed my random digression?
I think that by saying we didn't just have a somewhat in-depth conversation about it, that means it didn't happen.
I think
no,
so,
it's
yeah.
It's like in Fire Emblem, how when you accidentally kill someone and you just rewind.
You just hit the purple rewind button.
Yeah, that's what we're doing here. Cool. Back to the top of the show. So a few things before we get started.
Yep.
So first of all, I guess I should share some news that I have been sitting on for a long time that you two both know about, but our listeners do not, which is that, so I was just gone for 4 weeks, locking myself in a room, writing a book. And I think within the next few weeks, I will also disappear for another few weeks because I am having a baby that is expected in the end of September, late September,
woo!
Something like that.
Yay!
So really, she could arrive at any time. And then I will be gone on paternity leave for a little while. And so you guys will have to find new subs to replace me for another 4 week period. So good luck with that.
I think we can handle it. I'm very excited. We're very excited for you and Amanda. You're going to have a good time. I'm looking forward to hearing dispatches from fatherhood from you. I think that this will be fantastic and fascinating.
Yeah, I think this will become a whole new type of podcast. Like, suddenly it'll be a podcast where one person is like, oh my God, I slept 2 hours last night. Oh my God, I have no time to play video games anymore.
You might, though. You never know. Yeah. I feel like time gets really weird and you end up with long stretches of time where you just have to find something to do. So you're probably going to play a lot of Switch games, I think.
Yes.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Which is basically what I do now anyway. I think there are these different like sweet spots, so there are different periods in newborn life where like the first couple of months you're not really sleeping because you have to feed them every couple hours and they don't really sleep through the night, but then once you hit a certain point, like 4-5 months ish first of all, they stop looking like an alien and look more like an adorable little baby, because at first they really look like just like a creepy little alien.
You're gonna think your own kid is cute, though. It's gonna
everything. Oh, of course. But then second of all, there's this point I think between like 4 or 5 months and then up to like a year when they start walking. But there's a point where they still stay in one place, but they're cute. They sleep through the night. It's like the perfect zone, like the perfect baby zone. And that's what I'm really looking forward to, because that's when I'll get to just enjoy having a baby and play video games. And then they start walking, and that's when all sorts of problems.
Oh, and they start like forming opinions about things. And
that's later.
It becomes a whole other thing.
That's a couple of years from now. Yeah. So Maddie, I'm sure you've seen it because you have a new niece.
Yeah, my sister had a baby, and so I have a niece now, and I have definitely been observing. They're still in the beginning phase where she can't see colors yet, and she's basically just a little alien, as you described. She can't do anything for herself, but yeah, she's starting to reach that stage, I think, where she's a few months old and can actually become a person, and that's exciting and cool to see.
So, unfortunately, I have not finished the book that I was hoping to finish. So, we'll see how I can juggle having a newborn and writing a book. That'll be fun.
You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. You'll be fine.
Just a few more weeks of crunch and it'll be done. And then a baby will arrive. Sure. And then that's baby crunch.
Or it might be delayed. But we'll get to that in the future. that's my new life development. What about you guys? Anything happened in the past few weeks that I should know about?
I mean, nothing on that level. No. Yeah, I already told people about my cool water bottle.
Like, oh, you got cool.
Not really quite
that's
as cool.
that's a big update in Kirk's life, really.
Yeah.
Mine is I'm considering whether or not to get that water bottle. Those are the main things that are going on with us.
we're all having like important life developments.
I would say it's all comparable. Yeah, it's all pretty much the same deal.
Just wait until your water bottle starts crying in the middle of the night.
Yeah. It's like it a water bottle that. Combined with a Tamagotchi, combined with a Furby. There's a really cool new invention that I can't wait to try.
This past weekend, I did go hiking in the Redwoods, and that was really cool. And I just wanted to say that that is an incredible thing to do. If anyone lives near, this is the Northern California Redwood Forest. The Redwoods are these really huge trees. People probably know what they are. Mm-hmm. And I had done that when I lived in California, but I hadn't really gone hiking like this, and it was crazy. I mean, have either of you ever been in forests like that with those trees that are like 3,000 years old and hundreds of feet tall?
No. Nope.
I like took photos of it. I tweeted some of them. They don't at all do it justice. You can see me standing next to the tree, so it gives you a sense, but it just does not capture at all. Like, it's this funny feeling where you take a picture of a thing. It's kind of like photographing the Grand Canyon. And then you look at your phone and you're like, oh, well, that sucks, because that does not capture at all the feeling of ridiculous awe, like I'm in this land of giants. So it was amazing. I really do recommend, if anyone gets a chance, to go to like old growth forests like that. Holy crap, it was cool.
That sounds cool. So where specifically did you go?
There's Redwoods National Forest was part of where we went, and there are a couple other, I think, state forests near there. It's in sort of Northwest California.
Cool.
So there's very limited areas left in the world where those kinds of trees still grow. A lot of them are killed during the Ice Age. So there's just, it has to be like this exact climate. And it looks like you're in Jurassic Park. We went actually to a valley where they shot parts of Jurassic Park too. And it also looks like Endor from Star Wars, because they shot a lot of Endor in the Redwood Forest. It just has this otherworldly prehistoric, like I guess both prehistoric and otherworldly look. It was rad. So I did do that and it was cool.
Did you run into any Ewoks?
No, I kept expecting to see them, though. Really, like, sometimes you'll just look over the hill and you'll be like, there needs to be a couple Ewok heads popping up over this, or like an AT-ST needs to come lumbering through these through these trees, just because it totally looks just like it.
All right, so let's get into some video game talk, shall we?
Let's do.
Maddie, let's start with you. What are you playing?
Sure. So I was really trying to beat Outer Wilds before you came back, Jason, and I feel like I'm really close. Like, I'm at this stage in the final game where I've collected so much information and I just need to figure out, like, what to act on next. And
have you solved all four of, like, the big mysteries? Like, if you go into the computer and you go into the red,
right,
like,
it shows you the different maps of what you've solved. Yeah, mm-hmm. So, like, I know how to get through the core of Giant's Deep, but I haven't done it yet. I, like, accidentally got to the place where you can get the warp core, but I didn't realize what it was at that time, so I, like, need to go back and get it later.
Oh, okay,
but
wow.
Like, I, like, hilariously tripped into that.
That's
and was
amazing.
Like,
I could totally see how that could happen.
So funny.
I'm just going to move these glowing spheres around and, like, see what happens, because you move
that's
glowing
amazing.
Spheres
well,
around in this game.
It's funny that you accidentally Well, so wait, do you know how you triggered it?
Well, because it's very difficult to get in there. I just was like, so the way you get in there, which I guess is a spoiler,
we should keep this
puzzle,
kind of vague, right? Yeah, there might still be people who don't know, but I think we can keep it vague.
There's a way to teleport into it. There's a way to teleport into it that involves, like, the sand falling in a specific way. And I just mentally was like, I can't figure out how to get this teleporter to work or where it goes, but I bet it has something to do with this. So I just kept trying it.
That's cool.
Was like, I bet this will work, because I've just been, like, messing around in the game a lot. But then sometimes I'll find something that confirms a suspicion that I had, and I'll be like, oh, okay, cool. Like, that's obviously what that is. And in that case, that was sort of what happened, where I was like, oh, that is where I ended up. Like, I didn't even realize where physically I had been teleported to when I used the teleporter that time. I just was like, now I'm in a new area. I don't know where I am. So that is a thing I'm doing in this game. But yeah,
it's so funny. You accidentally solved like the thing that trips everyone up.
Well, I didn't though, because I don't know what, I mean, I still don't know like where to put the warp core. So I really haven't solved anything.
Well, but that entry point was a real sticking point getting for me. I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah, getting into there is the one place in the game that's like, that people complain about. It's not telegraphed
it's
well,
not...
or like it kind of breaks some of its own rules. But
well,
we should just do like a spoiler cast when you're done. Because a lot of people have been asking
We should do that next week because I'm really close. And
you are
close
to finishing.
I also was talking in Work Slack about how hard the Black Hole Forge is to get to. I actually feel like that one is a lot harder and took me a lot of tries.
Well, because you
it's
didn't...
mechanically harder.
Well, unless you wait. The problem is you didn't
wait. Well, you wait, but also you have to go like a really freaking long way down in order to get all the way to the Hanging City or whatever it's called in order
you
to get to Meltwater.
If you wait long enough, then enough of the planet will fall.
Well, no,
that you
Jason,
can...
Wait.
We should save all this for spoilers. These are too spoilery.
I won't give away how you solve the puzzle to get to the Black Hole Forge.
I'm really enjoying that, like, anyone who hasn't played the game is listening to this and being like, what the hell
I don't
are these
know
people talking
saying.
About? And probably doesn't care. And people who have played the game are like, I really want to hear a spoiler cast.
Well, anyone who hasn't played the game should go friggin' play Outer Wilds. Because it's incredible.
It is incredible.
Just
but
wait
it's
until
also,
you see the ending. Oh man, it's so good.
I would also say like the kinds of spoilers for this game, the reason why we're being so reticent is because the kinds of spoilers for this game, it's not really narrative spoilers. It's like puzzle and discovery spoilers. Yeah. So like even describing, like for example, I also met a character at the Dark Bramble as well last night when I was playing. So like stuff like that has been really cool to like discover, and I can tell I'm like almost there on a lot of stuff, so that's exciting too.
Nice.
So that's cool. I should be done by next week and we can do a little spoiler
section. So the last time we talked 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, whatever it was, you were like not into it. Have you gotten a lot more into it? It sounds like
I'm a lot more into it, but not gonna lie, there are parts of it that have really frustrated me. It's usually just when I'm lost or when I need to fly the ship to a really specific spot and I'm not that good at flying the ship. Like Dark Bramble, I don't think there's a spoiler, but there's some really tricky flying parts there where you have to be super exact and like silent at places. And like that is very difficult for me. I'm just not that good at flying the ship, and I also get motion sick easily. So like those are pretty significant hindrances for me in this game. But I like it enough that I'm just muscling through it anyway, which I think speaks to the game's quality, even though like I am having some difficulty with that aspect of it. And I just, as a person, like sometimes getting really lost in a game, like sometimes that frustrates me. I'm not a patient person. I've talked about that many times on the show as part of why I was not good at the stupid Black Hole Forge, because you do have to be patient to get in there, and I'm just not patient at all. So I guess like my advice really is just, you know, figure out how to be patient. It's something I've really had to work on in games like this, and also like stealth games. And I think I've improved a lot as a person with that kind of thing, like a game where you just have to wait before you can act, and you're really just sitting there and you're not even touching the controller. Like,
oh man, I can't wait to hear what you have to say after you finish it.
All right, well, I might hate the ending. I don't know.
Spoiler cast next week.
We'll see. I want to tell me about Fire Emblem, guys. You guys are all, you're just playing
Fire
Emblem.
Well, let's do that last. Let's get through some other games first. Kirk, are you playing anything else besides Fire Emblem?
I played Eliza as well, which I see you're going to talk about too, so I can just talk about those with you. I talked a lot about Fire Emblem already on this show, so I'm curious what you think of it.
Yeah, well, so let's talk. Okay, first let's talk about Eliza. So Eliza is this new visual novel. For those of you who listened to the show back at GDC, we had our buddy Matthew Burns come on, and he talked about a visual novel that he was working on. This is that visual novel. So if you are interested in that, it's really, really cool. I really enjoyed it quite a bit. It's basically about what if, it basically asks the question, what if Uber, but for therapy? What if the gig economy was applied to therapy? And so basically, it's about this world where you can go into an office building and talk to someone who has this headset on called Eliza that basically is a therapy bot and will give you AI generated responses to your problems. And it tells this story story about this woman named Evelyn who helped create Eliza and then took a long break from it, from everything, basically took a break from life, burnt out and took a break from life, and then came back and is kind of working as an operator for Eliza. So it's like if someone who was a founder of Uber came and worked as an Uber driver. And it does some really interesting things, asks some really interesting questions, and tells a really cool story that I enjoyed quite a bit. I actually did an event with Matthew a couple nights ago at the Strand bookstore here in New York, where I asked him a whole bunch of questions on stage. So that was pretty fun. And yeah, really cool game. Kirk, you liked it quite a bit too, right?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. So I should say that like Matthew and I are actual friends and we talk a lot. And through the process of writing this game, we talked a lot. And in playing the game, I see so much of him in it and so many of the conversations that we've had. Like I'm obviously biased to like the game, both because I like him as a person, but also because a lot of the pleasure of it, I got a lot of pleasure out of just watching the characters and seeing things he and I had maybe talked about or that I knew were on his mind expressed through these great characters in this game. He's a really good writer, which is cool. It's like a cool thing when someone that you know and just kind of talk to turns out to be really, really good at something. Like, I knew he was a good writer. I got to know him because I had read his writing on the internet. But, like, it's really well written.
Like, it's sort of like when your good friend is just like, hey, I'm going to take 30 seconds and play some sax over Fire Emblem music, and it just blows everybody away. And you're like, oh my God, like, how are we even friends with someone this talented?
Okay, sure. Playing that was really cool. And I like the game a lot. I recently read, I guess I don't want to promote it too much because it feels like I'm, like, promoting my friend on the show.
That's okay, as long as you're transparent about it.
And I think the game is like really cool and people would like it. It's so much more than just like a Black Mirror thing. I just read Rob Zachney's write-up of it at Vice, which I think was really smart and insightful. He articulated a couple of things that I didn't see in the story, even though I really, you know, I played it and like talked to Matthew about it and was like, you know, really, I think I caught a lot of what was going on, and there's a lot going on in this game. It's like much more than any one thing, even than the hook of like therapy, but Uber, like even that isn't really the center of the game. It's just like about people and about our modern society and life. Like it just made me think about so many things that I think about now, and it goes in all these different directions, but it doesn't like come down anywhere on a lot of them. It just has you kind of be there. And one of the things I like that Rob pointed out is that if it says something about therapy, which it says a lot of things about therapy, you sit in these sessions with people and you're the kind of the face on the Alexa. So like, you know, you're just reading the thing and they're, you know, they're talking to the robot and you're just a face to listen to them. And it's kind of like there's an implicit thing in there where a lot of the people are struggling in their lives in one way or another. Like, and, you know, in the background of the game is it's set in Seattle and it's very like, you know, the way that Seattle is now, the way that Portland is becoming, the way that San Francisco definitely is, how it's just really hard to be a normal person working and living. And like, it's just life grinds you down and like, you don't have enough money. And there are a lot of characters that are running into these hardships. And it kind of has an implicit criticism of the way that people be like, you should just go to therapy. That'll help. Because like, it will help. But also, there are these things going on in people's lives that are just like hard, actual things that are making their lives hard. And that's true so often in the game in a really just subtle way that just feels totally true in the way that a lot of the game does. And I think like Rob really did a great job of kind of highlighting that. And I hadn't thought about it that way. But reading his critique of the game, I was like, oh, that's super true. And that's really like one of the many things about this game that felt true. So mm-hmm. That's like a specific thing I liked about it. But I really do think that it's special and cool. And I'm also very proud of Matthew for like writing and directing such an awesome game. I think it's just really good.
Yeah, it's really, really good voice acting too. We should mention also it's a Zachtronics game. And it's not usually, it's not the type of game you would expect. For those of you who don't know, Zachtronics is known. It's this guy, Zach Barth, right? That's his last name? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who is known for coming up with these like cerebral programming language-based puzzle games. And they've never done anything like this, a visual novel where it's just a story. But if you've played games like Opus Magnum or like Shenzhen IO and you've enjoyed the story behind them, then those were all written by Matthew. So you will probably enjoy this too.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think it's good.
And then I also played, I've mostly been playing Fire Emblem, which we'll get to in a second, but I also played a bit of Jackbox Party Pack, number 3, I believe it is, which is, so here's an interesting story behind it. And I'm just so in awe of like the fact that these Jack, you don't know Jack people have just been coming up consistently with games and like been successful for all these years and years and years. Because I played You Don't Know Jack like in middle school, like, uh-huh. like many years ago, 20 years ago. So I had some people over a few weeks ago during my book leave, and I was planning on playing Mario Party, but it wound up being that there were like 5 of us in Mario Party. You can only play 4 people, I believe. And we were like, okay, what should we do? And I started like, just, I opened up the Switch and like started looking through the eShop, and I was like, Jackbox Party Pack. I've like played Quiplash before and really enjoyed it. Why don't I just get that? And it turned out it was the perfect game if you have people over and you have too many people who for like a Mario Party, but like you don't want to play Smash or anything else that's like more than 4 people, because it's perfect because everyone just plays the games on their phone and you don't have to worry about controllers. You just look at the screen and it's got all these fun things. Like Quiplash is the one that I enjoyed the most. That's basically what's the name of that game, Cards Against Humanity, except you fill in whatever you want instead of having to use predetermined cards. And so that's super super fun, especially if you're in a group where you can all just like make ridiculous inside jokes and like references to things that only you would know and stuff like that. So that's super fun. And then there's just a few other really good ones. There's one that's like a murder mystery party, a murder trivia party.
Yeah, that one's like closest to straight up You Don't Know Jack. Exactly. It's just instead of it being Chippy, whatever his name is, it's like it's murder voice guy. Yeah.
So that's
it's,
always
it's basically
funny.
You Don't Know Jack.
Yes, like, that's it's the like trivia. There was one that we played that was super fun. That's like they give you these surveys that they ask for people. They might have asked people, do you ever like, I don't know, do you pee in the shower? I don't think this is a real one, but it's like one that would be there. Mm-hmm. And then they pull everybody in the room, everybody's playing, they're like, what percentage of people do you think said yes to this, to pee in the shower? And then so if I'm up, I might guess like, oh, 10%. And then the real answer shows up and it's like 40%. And I get points based on how close I am to the real answer. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else playing can guess, is it higher or is it lower than what the person who guessed it actually thought? So that's super fun, just like a really fun game. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it a lot more. Like at first I was reluctant to be like, oh, $15, am I really gonna buy this? But then I'm so glad I did, because it was so worth it. I love the Jackbox. Yeah. All the games
I'm a huge fan. I feel like those people are talented and kind of like they just live in their little niche. Uh-huh. And make their games. I feel like I have a hit and miss like rate. I've played these with friends too. There are some that I like more than others. In Party Pack 4, Fibbage is really fun if you're looking for more to play. Like that one's good. Uh-huh. But and then there are times where I'll play one where it's just a little overly convoluted, the game design. But the overarching idea of having people use their phones as their buzzers in a game show is just great.
It's
like
brilliant.
It's such
smart.
A winner that you can't really
I feel
like
it helps
really
people
wrong.
Who are like afraid to play something like Super Smash Brothers or even Mario Party 2. Like if you have friends who are like, oh, I don't want to hold a controller. I don't play games, like that kind of person. Like this is the game that I've seen galvanize a party and like everyone can play it and not feel left out. So.
Yeah, I've never not had fun with these games, just no matter what the group of people is, like people wind up having a good time.
Yeah, no, super fun. Have you guys played Quiplash? That's my favorite of them so far.
Yeah, Quiplash is good.
I don't
Quiplash
think I ever have, but maybe I will. It sounds good. So.
It's good. So the way it works is that like, so okay, say there's six
I mean,
people.
I don't like Cards Against Humanity, but I do like writing down jokes that only my friends will understand.
I think it's much better when you can come up with your own answers. Then it winds up rewarding creativity, and then like sometimes it
Fibbage
encourages.
Fibbage is kind of like that too.
And yeah, it depends on your crowd. You might have a crowd that is like way more into darker humor, and you might have a crowd that is like, ooh, I don't know about that. And so it can be really fun depending on your group, or like if you have a good group of people. So the way it works is that like, say you have 6 people, everyone gets 2 prompts for each round. And then there's a final round that's different, but for the normal rounds, everyone gets 2 prompts, and then you enter your prompt, timer goes up, and then it cycles through and it's a head-to-head match. So it might be me versus you, and then they'll rate your our answers to the prompt, and then everybody gets to vote on whose is better. And so that's how it works. And so it's like
it's a little bit like, I think that Jellyvision made Acrophobia. Did you ever play that? This was one of the first internet games that I played, where they give you an acronym, and then everybody makes up what it stands for and votes for the funniest thing, and it was online. That was very early online gaming that my friends and I would all like gather around one monitor and try to like crowdsource answers. It was super fun.
I remember playing that in like our computer lab. We would get a ton of people. Mm-hmm. There was one other, not Acrophobia, but like something else that was very similar, similar in concept, that whose name I'm long forgetting. But yeah, no, it's super fun. And part of it, there's also like a metagame aspect to it. And people in my group of friends would get mad at each other and be like, oh, you're playing defense because like you think that one of them is like by someone who is has higher points, and you're like guessing who came up with it based on their sense of humor. And it's just all, it's very, very entertaining. Okay, so why don't we actually take a break and then get into Fire Emblem Talk? You guys want to do that?
Sure.
Yes, let's do
it. So let's take a break and then we will talk about some Fire Emblem.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
And we are back. It is good to say that for the first time in like 5 weeks. And we are back. I missed it. I missed our transitions.
We're back.
Let's talk
about
Fire Emblem, shall we?
Okay.
I know you guys have talked about this a lot, but I have not had a chance to talk about it yet. And I
and
would
you have
like
some slides
to.
Prepared? You're going to unfurl a presentation?
I have a PowerPoint presentation, and I want you to see my thoughts.
Okay, great.
I have prepared rankings of all of the characters based on how much I would like to marry them.
As well as their skills and whether the marriages would actually be gameplay beneficial.
Less important. Less important.
That's okay. Yeah, I don't care about the min-maxing. I just care about their personalities.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. It's probably my favorite Fire Emblem game to date. I just really enjoy the Persona / Trails of Cold Steel high school drama elements of it, and like the aspect that half of it is like choosing what to do with your limited time, and then the other half is battling. In the first part of the game, I actually just got to the second half of the game last night. In the first part, I found it way too easy and started getting overleveled and stuff. And now I think it's getting a little bit better. It's starting to feel like enemy levels are finally catching up to mine. But just it did not feel well balanced in the first part of the game, which I believe Kirk, you were also complaining about how easy it was, because that was too. I'm playing on normal. And it was to its detriment.
I wouldn't say complaining. It is easy, but I don't know if I would say I'm complaining about it because I'm kind of fine with the difficulty level.
Yeah, I just felt like I felt like the decisions I was making in the school mode weren't actually having an impact on anything because I just one hit killed every enemy. But I'm curious to see how the second half like handles all that stuff. But anyway, so yeah, I'm really enjoying. I picked the Black Eagles and Edelgard, and I really like all of them. I really just have grown quite fond of a lot of my characters to a point where I got a couple of them killed and got pretty sad about it.
Wow, and then, you let your characters die.
You didn't go back in time?
No, ever since Awakening, I've always thought to myself, like, if I'm going to play permadeath, what's the point of playing permadeath unless you're going to stick with it and, like, not bother, cleaning up your messes?
I have a take on this, but go on. I want to hear.
Sometimes I'll use the time rewinding mechanic, but I actually think what happened with this one was that they were killed, and then I either immediately finished the battle or too much stuff had happened, and I didn't feel like going back, and I was just you know what? I'll just see what happens. I was also very curious because so much of the game is cutscenes of your class all talking together. It just felt like I was surprised that they would actually permanently remove some of those party members, but they sure did. And now every time my class meets together, I'm missing Caspar and Dorothy, who I got killed.
Wow, but, you got Caspar and Dorothy killed.
Yeah, The other part of me was you only have a limited number of people that you can take into each battle, but you can also recruit students throughout the monastery. So you could theoretically recruit 30 people and only be able to play 11 of them per battle. And so part of me was thinking, you know what? I actually want to play around with the new people, so I'll just let these two get killed so I can substitute them with Felix and Lysithia and other people that I just recruited.
I think that's a pretty standard way for a teacher to think about their class.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking like a professor, and professors generally think that
people...
A couple of them are
going to die. You know,
hey, it's war, man. These are just my chess pieces. They're not real people.
So I have a couple of thoughts on the things you mentioned.
Yes.
First of all, yeah, regarding recruitment, at first I was super anxious about it when I first started. I was like, I need to know how to recruit people. And then I kind of figured out how you can do it. If you just get them to a B grade, they just come join you. So you can basically recruit anybody. And then that tension immediately went away for me, which was nice.
Is that true? Man, it's so funny you mentioned that, because we've been trying internally to figure out exactly how the recruiting system works, and what some other people said at Kotaku was very different than that.
Yeah. Oh, I just Googled it, and I mean, that was the consensus, and that absolutely works.
People say that when you get them to C or B, then the thresholds for stats and skills that you need
at C
go lower.
I believe it drops, but at B they will just automatically join your house at some point in the month.
Okay.
You can even save scum. You can save at the end of the week, then do the week of instruction, and if they don't join your house that week, just reload. I did this once just to test it, to get Ingrid to join my house, and then they'll just come join. But once they're B, they're going to come join you. Huh. So you can just spam them with flowers. Once you're growing flowers, you have so many friggin' flowers, or just go buy gifts because I have unlimited money, and you can get anybody. So at that point, I actually started thinking, okay, well, how many people do I want to get? Because like you said, you can only have 11 on the field at a time, and there does just come a point, and this happened with Awakening, which was the last one that I played all the way through. You get this massive army of characters, and you kind of don't even care about them, and it actually sort of cheapens it, or feels a little bit overly noisy when people are having support, C-level support conversations with one another toward the end of the game. They just are getting to know each other, and I'm like, I don't care. I want to know about the people who've become great friends on the battlefield over the last 70 hours. So I kind of limited it and only picked 5. I just picked the people that I liked. I think I picked a lot of the best people, though. But Bernadetta, I know everyone loves Bernadetta, and I didn't recruit her on purpose just because I was like, I'm going to play Black Eagles next time through, and I'll just save that. So I only have a few people in my class, and that's been great. I really like the group that I have. I love the Golden Deer kids. They are wonderful. I think you and I maybe could do a spoilery-ish discussion about Act 2, not now, but I think that
Let's wait to finish it.
Okay, but at some point, I would love to have a just out loud conversation about stuff that happens, not now, because I think that it is extremely good. I knew a lot of things that were going to happen, but there's some story stuff in this game that's just so great that I really admire.
I was texting you. It turns out that there are 4 paths you can take, and I accidentally got the most difficult path, the
secret one.
I guess it's not difficult. It's not even secret.
It's not secret.
It's just the one alternate one. The other three, I think, have similar trajectories, and I accidentally got on the 4th alternate one that is very different.
Though I do think they're all 4 quite different. I think that this is a game that I actually kind of want to play through 3 times. I really like this game.
I wish you could choose at that. You could start from the midpoint instead of having to play the whole first part 3 times.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I don't agree. I think that playing through the first part builds your relationship, and the relationships that you build are extremely crucial to why that thing I'm talking about that's so cool is so cool. I think the game needs to do the legwork. It can't just jump you there because that's a shortcut. And the whole reason that it works is because of the relationships that you build, and that just takes time.
Fair enough.
But one other thing, and that's related to difficulty and permadeath, which is that I do think the game is very easy. I mean, my main character is just a complete killing machine. I can just like send him like a laser toward the enemy commander and he'll just kill everyone who messes with him and just wreck them. Like, I don't quite do that because I want to level people up and it's more fun, but I just feel like a cat toying with my prey when I'm playing this
game. And what happens is basically if you're out leveling someone by like two or three levels, they'll just miss you every time they
you basically
to
just don't take damage. And I definitely got over leveled too. I gather, talking to people I know who are playing on hard, that hard actually isn't that much more difficult. There's going to be a third difficulty level that I think will actually be hard, but hard I don't think is even that hard. I think you still get overleveled and you still crush people. So, but there's this thing with the permadeath, and you mentioned not understanding why you're doing it if you just let yourself rewind time. But actually, it sort of changes the stakes of a battle.
Well, no,
if, like, I never let my kids
save
die.
Scum more than rewind time. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were saying you don't use the built-in mechanic.
No, I
I've
do
never
use that.
Saved scum to battle.
No,
I have like 10
that.
Rewinds though, so I can essentially undo any death. Like if I'm losing someone that many times, like I've leveled up. You're leveling up those statues, right? That like give you more rewinds. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyways. The fact that I can't lose anyone in a battle changes the stakes and the difficulty of a given battle in a sort of interesting way. Where on the one hand, I'm just like plowing through everybody and the fact that I'm going to win the battle isn't really a question. There is this question of how can I do it in a way that won't, that is essentially a perfect playthrough. Like I have to play every battle perfectly, right? I can't lose anyone. And that's very, very different than your average tactics game. Or at least your average tactics game without permadeath. And that's kind of interesting. It makes me understand a little bit more why the difficulty might be tuned the way that it is, because you're not exactly playing to win. You're playing to win perfectly. And that just is a slightly different thing to like challenge players to do. There are still times where I'll accidentally overextend someone and almost get them killed, or I had to rewind a little bit in the early game. So it's a more nuanced kind of difficulty if you assume that most players aren't going to be okay letting their characters die. And I think that's actually kind of interesting. And like you said, also, I am finding it a little more challenging in Act 2, and I'm sort of curious how that'll go.
Me too. So a couple other thoughts. First of all, I'm really enjoying the story, but the writing, the like moment-to-moment dialogue is ridiculous to the point where it's bad, and I think there's I think there's like a fine line. Like it's a certain art to write medieval style dialogue without also making it so clunky that it's just like hard to read. And I think this game goes too far in the realm of the preposterously written for a lot of the characters. As much as I enjoy many of their personalities and their characters.
I actually don't
traits.
Agree. I find maybe it's the kids in my class, but I find a lot of the
could be.
Writing to be, it's pretty broad, but it's very charming.
Yeah. Keep in mind. So the Black Eagle House is mostly nobles, and nobles have this like stuffy way of speaking. So I imagine a lot of it is that.
My main noble is Lawrence, who is the fucking worst. And
imagine an
guy.
Entire house of like people.
But he's
like
kind of
Lawrence.
A caricature. But I they're all broad, but I find them all pretty charming, and you know they have all those nice little surprises.
But no, that's the thing. The charming, like the charm of all these characters makes it easy to look past that. But like if you look at something like Final Fantasy XII, where it's all written in this like faux Shakespearean like medieval quality, but it's still all just like really good dialogue. I think there's a good contrast there. Other thoughts. I really enjoy the fact that you're like living this school life and getting to interact with everybody. But at the point I'm at now, I've gone through the monastery so many times and so many different weeks that I'm just like so sick of it. And I'm probably going to like plow through without taking the time to just like dick around in the monastery much more, because it's just so tedious. The process of going from place to place every single time and talking to everyone. Because you just like literally have to like either fast travel or walk through a dozen different areas and find everybody and talk to them. It just takes a lot of time.
It's kind of a conundrum, right? I find that at this point or for a while, I'll do the stuff at school. You know, you'll get a free weekend and take your time, and it'll be like, okay, that's what I'm literally going to do for this whole evening.
Right.
I'm just going to walk around
school. It takes
an
hour and a half.
And I feel like my playtime also is significantly, like I'm at 42 hours to get to Act 2 or something like that. It took me so much time just because I'm really going slowly. And I do think that time, like going and talking to each individual character, you just get like a couple lines of dialogue that are their reactions to the latest happenings in the story. But the more I do that, the more I am invested in the characters. And
it
does make things like the big things that pay off and the big developments the characters undergo really feel awesome because you've spent so much time, but it takes a lot of time. So I don't know how,
I wonder if it's a dilemma, especially for someone like you who is already planning on playing through it again. And I kind of want to play play through it again just to see the other side of things, or like one of the other sides of things. But like knowing that I'm going to have to do that whole routine, not only over and over again to finish this game, but like a second time over and over and over again.
I don't know. I have a feeling that it's not going to feel quite as... like it won't take as long, and I'll skip through a lot of stuff, and I'll have stuff that carries over, like leveling stuff, and it'll just go faster. I wonder if that's really the same. Well, yeah, I'll find out. It's surprising to be planning a new game plus.
Yeah, no, right? It's wild. Another thought I had is that like I really enjoy strategy RPGs and strategy games in general, but I wish more games, and I'm not saying Fire Emblem should do this because Fire Emblem is what it is, but I wish more games were like more like the Final Fantasy Tactics, where it's smaller armies, deeper smaller maps, deeper strategy, and 5 versus 5 as opposed to 11 versus 25 or whatever it is. But you put a lot more energy into like customizing each character and giving them individual skills and thinking a lot more. Because in a game like this, you get to the point where you're not even bothering with like going through every single character's combat skills and stuff, because it doesn't really matter. Like at a certain point, you're doing so much damage with each character that it's, you don't even bother going through each of their skills pages and swapping things out every single time, because it's too much. It's just like the scope is, it's a lot more, it's wider but shallower as opposed to,
you know, you could try limiting yourself to 5 characters in your army. I mean, you don't have to dispatch
a full group. No, well, the game isn't designed for that. I'm talking about a game that would be designed for like a, instead of a massive map, like a 12 by 12 grid, like a Final Fantasy Tactics thing. I'm just saying that I wish more games emulated that style for strategy games as opposed to the bigger but shallower. Like I want the smaller but deeper type strategy. It's sort of like, it's like the RPG style of like, do I want a Skyrim where it's humongous but there isn't a ton of depth, or like something that is smaller, like I don't know, a Deus Ex where it's like more contained but a lot deeper. Just a stray thought I had. I'm not saying that this should do that. I'm just saying I wish there was more of that in general. Yeah, more games need to emulate Final Fantasy Tactics is what I'm saying. But overall, man, I really love this game. I have been playing a ton of it. I'm really enjoying it. It's perfect on the Switch, as many things are. Maddie, I'm surprised you haven't played it at all. Is it because too many of us are playing it?
Yeah, I've just decided I don't care about it. No, JK, I will get it. I think I'm going to be time displaced from you guys on playing it, though, because I want to beat Gears of War 4 before Gears 5 comes out. So I think I'm going to be in yet another situation where I'm playing a game that neither of you have played at all, and I'll talk about it on this show. And then in like 3 months, I'll be like, I'm finally playing Fire Emblem. This game's really good, you guys. So
there will always be more to say.
No, that's great. Fire Emblem. Yeah, no, maybe by then Kirk will be like on his new game plus.
Maybe he'll be on a 6th playthrough and he'll be recruiting completely new characters, and I'll be like, oh no guys, I think these golden deer characters are pretty good. So yeah, I don't know, stay tuned for that in 3 months. Nice. I guess.
Yeah, it's funny, I'm pacing it out because I want to play, I've been kind of making a list of the games I want to play this year that are coming out, because I've been kind of doing
order,
a thing right.
You got to schedule kind of, that yeah, stuff. That's what adulthood is like. People don't understand.
It's sort of nice. Well, I've been taking this different approach of like trying to finish games, and I want to stick with that with Outer Wilds. There's like this, what's the game? There's this space game, Space Bandit, something that just came out on PC that looks kind of neat. And like there, like I get the thing of, ooh, I could just go play that. Or the No Man's Sky VR is out. I'm probably going to check that out at least to see what it's about. I'll maybe talk about that next week. But Control, the Remedy game, is coming out later this month. And I'm like, I do really like Remedy games. I want to play that. So hopefully maybe I'll finish Fire Emblem by then and then play that.
But you want to finish your additional playthroughs of Fire Emblem by then, will you?
No, that I don't count as like needing to do that all at once. I think I'll probably have to take a break after 70 hours of this, as much as I love it. But I am kind of looking out at that. And we're going to talk about focus and distractions in a minute. But I'm really trying to stick with this. And it is kind of nice to just, like, you're playing Outer Wilds. That was the game that made me start doing this, was playing Outer Wilds and being like, it's so nice to just play this single-player game and then finish it and then move on to another one. In that case, Metro, and, like, play that and finish it. And, like, I've been really enjoying that rhythm. So, hey, like, more power to you. Like, don't, you know. The whole, like, being scattered isn't
fun. It's funny that, like, people out there are like, wow, now Kirk knows how it feels to be a normal gamer instead of, like, a journalist who's
every single week playing a billion things. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's
Life. I mean, I have been playing, I will not lie that I've been playing Fire Emblem like a game journalist over the last week. I've been hitting that game
pretty
hard.
Your music is suffering.
It is. I've not been getting a lot of work done. But, you know, sometimes a really good game comes out and you do that.
Well, that's actually a really good segue, because this is something I wanted to talk about. So for the past 4 weeks, I was in kind of this interesting world where my job, quote unquote, was to just write. And but I was also doing interviews and reporting and stuff, but it was mostly just sit and write. And I found that, like, so I'm very much a morning person. I know that makes you angry, Maddie.
It doesn't make me angry. I found
that, like, I wake up, like, my routine was, like, I would wake up at, like, 6, go to the gym, make breakfast, go grocery shopping, whatever, do errands, and then start writing at, like, 8-ish. And for 3 or 4 hours, I could just get a shitload of stuff done. I would just, like, super focus, like, incredibly into it, tuned in, whatever. And then, like, usually in the early afternoon, my mind would start to wander, and then I would find myself on, like, hour-long breaks where I would just be, like, browsing Twitter on my phone or, like, playing guitar or, like studying Japanese or, like, some other thing that I should not have been doing at all. And my mind would just wander. And part of me wonders if it's, like, the human mind was just not meant to focus that intently for 8 hours or for however many hours, and really we shouldn't be doing that more than, like, 3 or 4 hours at a time. And then the other part of me was wondering, oh man, am I just, like, should I just be not doing, like, should I be focusing more? Oh no, what am I doing to myself? And I would get anxiety at night, like, when my wife would get home and we would be watching TV or whatever, I would be like, oh my God, I should be working right now. And so at the end of the day, at the end of the leave, I didn't get as much done as I would have liked to. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on, like, this conundrum, especially yours, Kirk, because you've made this into your job as, like, having to focus on one thing all day. On, like, A, how to, like, what kind of balance to find when it comes to, like, setting intense work as opposed to a normal job amount of work, which is like, okay, I'm working, okay, check over here, check my email, talk to someone, whatever. Intense work, and then B, how do you avoid distractions and getting distracted by things like Fire Emblem or, like, Twitter, where it feels like if you're not, like, paying attention to the conversation, you're missing out constantly, which is something that I was running into a lot, just, like, feeling a missing out, that FOMO. Kirk, why don't you start and give us some of your thoughts, because you've turned your job.
Fix Jason's brain. Do it now.
Okay, it's time to fix your brain. No, I have a million thoughts about this. I think about this kind of stuff all the time. There's all kinds of people talking about this now. I think that, like, the attention economy is such a subject of conversation for so many people. And because a lot of people feel the way you talk about it, I think we all feel that way, right? Like, I at least, I don't know about you, Maddie, but I'm guessing you found that very relatable. Like, I think everything you're talking about is, like, super relatable. Yeah. So, like, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are thinking, oh, yeah, I've totally been there and felt that way. I don't know. It's all a process, right? I have a few things I try to do, but at the same time, I'm, like, the schedule that I have now is very pretty organized, and it's broken into chunks, and I have not been taking that much time to do the kind of work you're talking about, which is usually going to be if I'm making actual music, like creative music, or sitting down to, you know, like, write a song or record a song. That's the thing that when I do it, I'll do it for 8 hours and I won't eat and, like, I'll finally realize that it's 3 a.m. Like, that kind of flow state that people call it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird thing and a different kind of work. And I almost find myself avoiding it, or not exactly avoiding it, but it can be so all consuming that I wind up putting aside all these little things that I've got organized, because I have actually pretty strict schedule that doesn't allow for a lot of distraction. You know, it's like I have, like, an hour of responding to emails. Like, I respond to all the Strong Songs emails. So, like, that's, like, once or twice a week, I'll, like, sit down, and that kind of takes time, and I, like, set aside time to do that. In the afternoon,
do
I, like,
you literally,
practice,
like,
this
set
instrument.
Your schedule, like, every morning, like Monday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., do this.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't write it down as much anymore, but yeah, it's more like I started by scheduling social media time, and I've talked about that on the show before, but I'm like, yeah, at 11 a.m. and at 4 p.m. every day, I check Twitter, and then I log out, and I'm logged out of Twitter. I don't have any social media on my phone. That would be my first advice for you, actually, if we're just giving advice. Like, if you want to be productive, get social media off your phone. Like, you don't need it there. It doesn't help you.
So I actually did the opposite. I got it off my computer and just had it on my phone.
So I do the, having it on your phone is, like, because I guess, I don't know, I could go down a bunch of, like, a big list of particulars, but this is more of a big picture thing. And Maddie, I'm curious what you think of this too, but, like, it's kind of about getting into a state of mind. And I know, Maddie, you meditate as well, but it's like getting your mind farther and farther away from the way that our current culture and our current internet culture makes our minds feel and makes us work is what I see as like the overarching goal. And there are a lot of ways to do that: limiting social media, meditating, practicing like mindfulness, just going on walks in the woods without listening to a podcast or having any like external stimulus coming into your brain, and just walking and letting your brain like kind of release whatever thoughts it wants to for an hour even, or a half an hour. So like that's more of a goal, and that I think it requires a lot of discipline, a lot of different approaches. But yeah, I don't know. That's a maybe a bigger version of the question that you're asking.
Well, how do you avoid, or do you just not feel that like fear of missing out, that like, oh man, I'm missing out on the conversation type thing? I guess it's different for you because you don't really have to pay attention to the world of gaming anymore as your job in the same way that you did in the past. You still do for the podcast, but you don't in the same, like, you don't have to be up on all the news and like actually
I didn't care that much even when I was at Kotaku. That's like about some of those topics, right? Like it's,
I feel like things... I've intentionally tried to turn off the part of my brain that even thinks that way, even though I am still a part of that world. Jason, I found that way of thinking about Twitter and social media to be exactly what Twitter wants you to think, and also pretty damaging to my brain, at least, and also my ability to actually do the work that I think is important. And we talk a lot at work, and just, I don't know, other creative people I know talk about how, why are you wasting that on a tweet? And like that kind of thing. Like it's sort of a joke we tell where it's like, if it's a funny tweet, it could be a post. But it's also true, and just in general in your life, like why, what is the social media for? And are you making something in your real life that you feel matters? And what is that? And do you own that thing? In this case, your book, like that's a thing that you control and you're releasing and it's yours. It doesn't belong to Jack. Twitter, like it's your
tweeting
own
wasn't
thing.
The issue for me. It was reading Twitter that,
right,
or like reading anything,
and it like feeling Twitter, like you're missing out on that cycle, and like you're, even if you're not actively participating in it, like seeing the daily soap opera of Twitter. I certainly still struggle with that. But to circle back to what you were saying at the very beginning, Jason, I think unfortunately you are right, at least based on the studies I've read, that you can't necessarily work for longer than 3 or 4 hours. Like sometimes I will enter that flow state that Kirk describes. That is rare. That's not something that you can do every day, at least in my experience. Usually for me, I can only work for like 3 or 4 hours like straight. If I'm writing and I'm just writing for 3 hours, like I can do that. But then around 3 or 4, I have to take a break. And maybe that's Twitter. Maybe that's taking Japanese Duolingo lessons or whatever. Maybe that's something else. And
Human
like that
Japanese
feels
is the app that I'm using now.
Unproductive. But like in my case, when it's break time, I would say like go for a walk. But then ideally you come back and you do more of it. That is the hard part, is coming back and doing like the second shift.
Well, no, for me, the problem was the second shift would just be interrupted. And so like I would write a
sentence
and then
you would never get back
in. I didn't get back into that state.
So
like,
sometimes that can be an issue with the specific work you're doing. Like if you're working on something that you're struggling with or can't quite find a way in on, I'm not saying that's true of whatever you were writing, but like I've had that feeling where I'm working on a song and it's like, I'm just like not happy with it, or it sort of just feels stuck and I just want to do something else, that my brain will just find ways to do something else. So that's part of it. I think, you know, a lot of times I am more actively rejecting the way that we think of mindfulness and like breaks and refocusing our minds in terms of productivity, because I'm really trying to like consciously just do that stuff. Like, don't go on a vacation or on a hike because it's, you know, a break from the work that you need to get back to do, but just because it's part of living and it's something worth doing.
Right.
And like that actually is part of that bigger, like that galaxy brain, big mind stuff of just like getting your head a little bit out of the constant distraction that I think we all feel all the time. And I definitely agree, Maddie, that Twitter and whatever social media in general, like their goal is to make us all feel like there's this conversation that we need to be a part of.
Or like, and you're even being productive. Like I feel like it tricks you into thinking you're doing something because you're like, I'm reading the news, I'm learning new things. But then spending an hour on Twitter, like have you really learned anything new? Could you have sat down and read a nonfiction book and learned a lot more possibly? Like I don't know. Anyway.
Well, there's another aspect to that you guys are kind of leaving out, which is the networking part of it.
Sure.
Like, I'm friends with a lot of these people that are on Twitter.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, and this is not me
lives.
Saying social media is evil or anything like that. It's that social media needs to be very carefully regulated. I think that we just need to really regulate these wonderful communication tools that we have all this access to. And agree. I mean, I like Twitter. Twitter is super fun. It's a great way for me to find listeners for my podcast and stuff. But like, it is, you know, also, it's a double-edged sword. And when I find myself, you know, that's, and it's just one thing. Like, Twitter isn't exactly all of what we're talking about. It's also like video games or Fire Emblem, or even the way I was talking about playing one game and getting distracted by another, mm-hmm. which like, it's sort of a similar mental process when you're playing one game and it starts to kind of feel like work, or you're not as sucked in, and then a new thing comes out and you get that and you start playing that and it's like, oh, I want to play this. And then suddenly you're kind of like at loose ends on both things. And that, like, finding the focus and forcing myself, which has required a weird amount of discipline to like play one thing and finish it, has actually been good. And it feels like another avenue of the practice of focusing and completing things and like sticking with things and like being structured and disciplined. So even playing video games can help with this, is what I'm saying. I'm saying you should play all of Fire Emblem.
So to get back to what you were talking about earlier, Kirk, when you have your schedule, are you like purposely avoiding like putting yourself in a situation where you have to work on the same thing for 5 hours at a time?
Yeah, like when I'm making a Strong Songs episode, that usually takes a couple of days, and I'll work for 3 or 4 hours, and there definitely will come a point where I'm like, okay, I've completed this section, and I just feel a little mentally like tired, and my voice also gets tired, which is a nice thing about doing anything that requires physical stamina or like recording, because you have to take breaks for your voice, and I'm like, okay, well, my voice sounds a little different now than it did at the beginning of this recording session, so I'm gonna just take an hour and go on a walk, and that always helps. And then it's just about not having deadlines where I'm like, I have to grind this out and finish it. So it's just, that's just having the structure of doing it way in advance. And hopefully, you know, I don't always manage this, but, you know, getting something done well in advance so you don't feel like you have to work for 8 hours to get it finished.
So you're saying that you should not try to have a baby and then write a book like the month before your baby is expected. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I think that could be a really productive time for you. You never know. We're going to we'll have to keep an eye on that. But it does sound like it could be a lot of work.
And the other part of this is that, like, so as I'm writing, and again, I'm bringing up my personal experiences because I think everyone can relate to this, including you two. So as I'm writing, I have to write on the internet because I'm writing in Google Drive, I'm researching on the internet in other tabs. I have tabs open with my interviews and research and all this other stuff. Suddenly, I'll just, like, it's a matter of habit that I'm sure you guys do all the time, where you're just, like, clicking bookmarks, seeing what else is happening, seeing your email, checking your whatever. And I purposely, like, logged out of Slack, logged out of Twitter, so I couldn't actually check those in my tabs. But I still found myself like getting into internet holes where it's like, oh, I'll just check out this YouTube video. Oh, it's like 6 minutes long. Okay, I'll just watch this. Oh, suddenly an hour's gone by and I haven't actually done any writing. Okay, I'll write a sentence over here. Oh, better like absentmindedly check some tabs and like click some other things. And I know there's all sorts of software that's like productivity software and all sorts of stuff like that. I've never found that stuff particularly useful, but I'm curious to hear what you guys and what other folks out there like use to train your brains to focus on things when you need to be focusing on them.
I don't use any of those apps. I've never used them because they don't work for me. They just frustrate me because I still have the muscle memory of like clicking on my bookmarks constantly. I think a lot of people have that muscle memory, and it's almost like you aren't even intending to click on Twitter or Tumblr or whatever you're addicted to. You just do it, and then you're like, why did I click this? And that happens to me a lot. And honestly, I talk about it far too much on the show, but meditating is the only thing that has actually helped me with my attention and having self-control in my life. That's it. That and like exercise. Like if I'm getting really twitchy and I'm just like, I keep clicking on stuff, I'm not concentrating, I need to just run around the block a few times, or like not even go for a full run, just go for a little run and then come back. Or like, I don't know, when I was teaching kids karate and they couldn't concentrate, I used to make them do 10 jumping jacks and then they would be able to listen to me. Like it's just one of those weird things where if you're like being twitchy on the internet and you keep clicking stuff, just like get up and do 10 jumping jacks and see how you feel.
Because I like that.
It kind of resets you. I don't know. It works for me. But those apps that like turn off Twitter, that just messes me up, because then I'm like trying to go to the websites and then they don't load. And I'm like, what am I doing? Oh, right. I had this app. Oh, ugh, ugh. And it like, it doesn't like make me more concentrated. It just makes me like mad at myself more. Mm-hmm. And then I just fall into the hole of being like, God, I'm terrible at this. I'm totally distracted. And then it's like, that's more wasted time on that. So yeah, I don't know. Just meditating and jumping jacks, I guess.
Both good pieces of advice.
Have advice as well.
No, I like all of that. I think the logging out thing is good. Do more of that.
Yeah.
Anything that makes you more mindful, and I think, Maddie, meditation is very good for this, is, you know, mindfulness is being aware of what you're doing. And mm-hmm. the minute you can be aware that you're doing these kind of trained things, which I've totally done that too, where you just type into the browser, like Twitter, Gmail, like all the things that you check, you can break those. They're just habits. You can break them. And you just need to decide to break them and then notice when you're doing them and be like, I am breaking this habit. This is something I've consciously decided to do and I'm doing it, mm-hmm. which like is a mindful thing to do because you're being aware of yourself.
Right.
Well, it's also a tough thing to do because you're addicted to the endorphins that you get when you do those things. So
yeah, of course. Of course. It's hard because those things are very enticing and fun and, you know, worth doing at times. So, like, yeah, you have to have some discipline. And, yeah, I'll get up and stretch, which is sort of similar to the jumping jacks tip, which is a great tip. And, yeah, I don't do it enough, but I'll just do some, like, whatever basic, like, yoga stretches or whatever, just really basic stuff for a couple minutes. And I don't do this enough because every time I do, mm-hmm. I'm like, I feel 1,000% better. And it took about 3 minutes. Why don't I do this more? And I don't, like, not anything hard, just, like, whatever, like a downward dog for, like, 2 minutes. And, you know, like, stretch your legs out a little bit. And then just come back to whatever you're doing. And that'll actually really
That's
help.
A good idea. You should put that in your daily schedule, like carve out time for it.
Yeah,
I've thought about it. I'm not that granular, but I might. It could happen.
I've tried stuff like reminders and I hate that stuff. So I actually wouldn't recommend that. But yeah. Anyway,
yeah, maybe
you'll
not.
You'll do great, Jason. You'll be fine.
It's already my book leave is over.
Listen, you're gonna have to finish that book on the weekends, man. And I believe in you.
That's true. I'll probably do some writing during my paternity leave, so that'll be interesting trying to juggle a newborn.
I think you should maybe be realistic with yourself about whether that's possible.
We'll see.
Reasonable expectations are good.
But that may be a conversation on the podcast another time. We'll get there.
Yeah, well, so I'm sure I'll talk more about this like after we have the child, but we're having...
The child.
The child. We hired a baby nurse for the first couple of weeks, and from what I've heard from people who've done the same is, first of all, that it's like highly recommended, but second of all, there isn't a ton of stuff for the father to do at that point because the mother is breastfeeding, the baby nurse is handling everything, like all the diapers and all the other random stuff they're going to handle. So I will be kind of just hanging around and probably try to do some writing at that point. But we'll talk about that.
Bonding with your
later.
Child emotionally? I don't know. You might fit that in somewhere.
Well, I mean, she can like sit on my lap while I write. That'll be I can be like, look,
adorable.
This is how daddy is trying to pay for your college one day. Okay, why don't we take a break and then we can get into some off-topic stuff. I have so many things I want to talk about here. All right, let's take a break.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we are back. Hello, Kirk and Maddie. Are you guys ready to talk about off-topic, non-video game things?
AKA the Veronica Mars segment of our show that we do every week.
Yes. I have a ton of things to talk about, so I'm going to get into that. And we'll do Veronica Mars last after we all get through our other
okay,
stuff, since
great.
We've all been watching that. So first of all, while I was on book leave, I watched a bunch of this show called House of Lies. Have either of you guys watched it?
Mm-mm.
So it's a show with Don Cheadle and Kristen Bell, and it's on Showtime, or it was on Showtime, and it's about these people who are like this team of consultants who go around from office to office and like basically do nothing except give them a bunch of buzzwords and shit. And the show is about how ridiculous the world of management consulting is and how terrible it is. And it's about these four terrible people who are making horrible jokes and insults to one another and like have no real feelings, or at least demonstrate no feelings. And it's somehow really compelling and fun to watch, partially because Don Cheadle and Kristen Bell are so good. And then Ben Schwartz is in it and he's really good, and this other guy who is ridiculous and also really good performances. That's part of it. And then the other part is that there's like this guilty pleasure aspect to it, where there's like a lot of sex and a lot of just like absurd, hilarious, like terrible dialogue, really horrible stuff. It almost reminded me of like watching Entourage back in the day, where I was like, I don't know why I'm watching this, but I'm compelled and watching it, at least until Entourage got really bad. So I enjoyed watching. I'm definitely not going to finish watching it. I like watched a couple seasons and I was like, all right, this is absurd, but I'm enjoying it. Just an enjoyable show, entertaining show. I also went and saw Spider-Man Far From Home, which was a while ago, but I don't think we talked about it, because I think I saw
Kirk
it
just saw as... it.
Buckley,
yeah, I saw it and reported back. I loved it.
Really, really good. Really enjoyed it. Just fantastic movie.
Jake Gyllenhaal, man. So much
Jake
fun.
Gyllenhaal
he was having
great.
Such a good time in that movie.
Tom Holland, fantastic. Everyone in it was just great and has me very excited about the future of the MCU. That combined with like those big and all the big Marvel announcements at Comic-Con, where they're like, all these movies are coming and it's a ton of obscure stuff that like I had never heard of, and I was very excited. I also just saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Have you guys seen that? The new Quentin Tarantino?
Nope. No, I want to. I know very little about it. I always see headlines and stuff, but I don't know that much about it. I was just kind of fine, but I'm curious if you liked it, I guess. But don't tell me too much, because I'm definitely going to see it.
I liked it a lot. I won't tell you anything about it, except for the fact... I mean, do you know what like historical event it's about?
Not really.
Nope.
I guess I don't. Yeah.
Okay, so I won't actually say anything except... for people who are listening and have seen it. So I didn't realize what it was about until like 3/4 through the movie. So I think watching it is a very different experience when you know who Shannon Tate is and what that story is. Then,
oh, well, I know who that is.
So. Oh, you know who Shannon Tate is. Okay, yeah. So you know that, like, well, what do you know about Shannon Tate?
Isn't she like the Manson family?
Okay, yes. So I didn't want to say that, but I didn't know that this movie was about the Mansons until like 3/4 of the way through. And I didn't realize that like, so that there's
Sharon
a lot of
Tate,
stuff.
Right?
Sharon Tate, yeah, that's it. There's a lot of stuff about the Mansons and like they show all this stuff. I won't get into specifics because, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but like, it's a very different experience when you know it's about the Mansons than it is when you don't. And it was very weird for me, and I wasn't sure why a lot of the things were happening on screen until it all clicked towards the end. And I was like, oh my God. I leaned over to my wife and I was like, this is about the Mansons. And she was like, yeah, I know. And I was like, damn it, I had no idea.
That's funny.
All that said, that part aside, Leo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt are both putting on fantastic performances. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it. There's some parts where you're like, oh, there's a lot of like bare feet and you're just like, this is interesting, knowing what we know about Tarantino on the internet. And there's definitely some questions that I've seen people ask about the way that how white man centric the movie is, which is something that you'll notice no doubt when you watch it. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good movie, and Quentin Tarantino, despite the fact that like he desperately needs an editor a lot of the time. A lot of things dragged on, as always.
A lot of things dragged on since his editor, who was amazing, died. And his
really?
Movie
I didn't know
having
that.
A great editor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, pre Django Unchained, it was, what was her name? I think it was a woman, and I don't remember her name. And she was like his editor for all his movies. And then she died really tragically, I think in like a hiking accident. God, I hope I'm not getting this all wrong. And then
well,
after
you can
that,
cut it out if you did.
Yeah, I'll double check. I'll double check and edit this out if I... But I believe I'm right. And yeah, so he then had different editors and no one's been able to edit in the same. And that's why Django Unchained is the first one that feels... It's like a cool movie, but it feels like really feels long weird. And all yeah. over the place. Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. I had no idea. But I mean, that said, even his Inglourious Basterds is my favorite movie of his. And even then, like there are scenes where it's like, okay, like he has a tendency to get gratuitous and it's the same thing with this. But I think they help build up towards some of the climactic stuff and help make a lot of it work. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good movie all around.
Nice. Just to confirm, her name was Sally Mankey. She did die in a hiking accident in 2010, mm-hmm. and she was his editor. And that sucks because she was very talented.
Yeah. I like to, he's just like a fantastic filmmaker in general and like just some really cool shots and cutaways and moments and just stylistic things that he does that really show an appreciation for film. One other thought is that like, I think if you grew up in the 60s or you're really familiar with the 60s, which none of us grew up in the 60s, so we are not familiar with this, but I think for that generation, it'll be like really spectacular because it feels so authentic to a lot of that world and the world of like the time when Westerns, once incredibly popular, were dying, and like there's all this 60s like kind of just ephemera in the movie that's really cool. I really enjoyed it. And then I have watched a shitload of Veronica Mars, but we'll get to that in a bit. Kirk, what else do you want to talk about?
Not a ton. I finally started watching Succession from the beginning because I've seen the second season is out and people are saying it's good.
Hell yes.
It's show is awesome. Like, it's great. It's Maddie, I think based so on what ridiculous. You said about Billions and what we had talked about, I think you'll like it. It's quite good. I'm really digging it. I've only watched a couple episodes, but it's like wonderful. So good
I'm
show.
I'm so glad that you're watching that. We can talk about the second season once we've gotten into it.
Yeah, cool. I started rereading Saga yet again. This is Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples' graphic novel or comic series. I had read a lot of it and then was going to start reading it, and so I read it all again, and I didn't keep reading it, and now I'm going to catch up. Like, I've gotten some of the issues that I didn't have, or the collections. I lose track of all the terms. The trade paperbacks, I guess, but they're digital. Anyways, I've, like, got a lot of the stuff that I didn't have, so I started over from the beginning again, because I love reading Saga, and there's so much cool art. Fiona Staples is so amazing that I just like looking at the art over and over again, so I'm fine reading it again, and I like it. And it also made me... I used to have a full print of, like, a full set of Why the Last Man that I loaned to someone, and then I just never got it back and lost it. And I really love Why the Last Man. This is also written by Brian K. Vaughan. So I found
it's a classic.
Oh, it's so good. And they're making a show out of it that our former colleague, Charlie Jane Anders, just announced. I just saw this on Twitter that she's going to be helping write it. She's going to be a writer on the show, which is dope. So cool. And she's a perfect fit. And like, it made me even more excited for the show since I love those books and I'm very skeptical that they could make a good show. But then again, given where we're at now with like TV budgets and stuff, I feel like maybe it's possible. So anyways, I ordered that and I'm excited to reread that. So I'm kind of back and reading some comics and stuff, which should be cool. And then the other thing is that I watched the rest of Veronica Mars season 4, which I loved. And
I
did finish it. We just barreled through the end last night. I was a big fan. But we can maybe talk about that.
Were you surprised by the end, or did you have an idea of what was coming?
No.
Did you finish it, Jason? Are you also done?
Oh, yeah. I finished when it
came.
All right, cool. Wife and I are both
And you're not... finished, right, Maddie, with season 4?
No, because I just decided for no reason that I would start watching season 2 just to remember it and just see what it was like, and now I'm on episode 20 of season 2, and
oh man, nice.
I don't fully know how that happened to
because
me.
It's
I
want
to hear about
that.
I won't say any more about Veronica Mars season 4 just to say that I liked it, but I do want to hear what you think of season 2 since we've all seen
some point,
season 2.
Maybe Fine. We should wait. So Maddie, maybe we'll wait for you to catch up to 4 and then we'll
all
do a
spoiler. We should do a spoiler cast next week about Outer Wilds and Veronica Mars, all of it.
Wonderful. Do you think you'll be done with 4 by next week?
I don't know. I guess I'll skip
going
season
pretty
3
fast.
Because I don't know what I'm doing or
it's
why
not
I did
worth
this.
Re-watching.
It's really not.
Well, hold on. Do you want to talk about anything else before we get into Veronica Mars?
Sure. I'll just quickly recommend If Beale Street Could Talk. I don't have to talk about it at length or anything. It's a romance movie, mostly black characters, and sort of set in a sad civil rights movement period of time. And I was expecting it to be super sad. My girlfriend and I kept putting off watching it, being like, oh, that one's going to be, it's going to be too sad. And then I think we like built it up too much, and it's actually more bittersweet and romantic and beautiful and I enjoyed it a lot. So I really recommend
that's
it.
Directed by Barry Jenkins, right? Mm-hmm, which you could say that about Moonlight,
yes,
too.
Yes, very much so.
Which is a little bit, like, for a long time, I worried that I was making too much of how emotionally intense that movie is. Because it's also just this light, beautiful movie. And really watching it, while it's really, I really want to see if Beale Street could talk. And I think yes. Barry Jenkins is amazing. So that's cool to hear that it's good.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. So anyway, Veronica Mars, I'm just so watching the second season, and I am enjoying the second season. I guess I'll just say, Jason, since we were talking about before the show about like the differences between season one and season two, I don't know if the creative team is different. Obviously, like Tessa Thompson's in the cast, and that's all that really matters. That's the main cool thing about season two is that she's suddenly there. But there are just some other narrative choices that I feel like make season two feel a little different than season one, like the mysteries and the perspectives that are shown to me seem different, probably just because I just watched all of season one. And
so I have some.
So for example, let me just give my one example. So you remember mm-hmm. how in season one there's an episode where Adam Scott plays a teacher, and this is a spoiler for the mystery of that episode, but throughout that episode Veronica's convinced that he's being wrongfully accused of sexually propositioning a student and being involved with one, and it turns out that she's wrong. And it's this sort of interesting episode about how she believes that this man that she likes couldn't possibly be guilty of this thing, and it mm-hmm. to me relatable, like you imagine yeah. people aren't terrible. And then you're sort of disillusioned, and you're like,
well,
oh,
also
this
person who accused him is terrible, so that helps. Well, add more
or so
to
she
it.
Thinks. It's the way that it
no,
plays
she,
out in
she
the episode.
Is. Well, the backstory is that like she was terrible to Veronica,
right?
In the
exactly,
past,
and so Veronica is like, oh, like I don't even like this girl who's the accuser, right. et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's all very relatable. It's an interesting yes. story. So then in season two, they do this other episode where Veronica's ex, Troy, is accused of rape, except he actually is wrongfully accused. And the entire episode is just set up in this weird opposite way where I was like, it's interesting that they did like a false accusation story in the first season that was like really played with your expectations. But right, then in the second season, nuanced. It's like kind of basic and not that interesting to me the way that story plays out, where like he appears to be falsely accused and he is. And that's kind of how that ends.
Well,
she
so,
finds
okay.
the real person in the end. And so, I don't know. It's just one example of how there are times in the first season when the mysteries genuinely surprise me. And in the second season, right. it just doesn't happen as often. It's not to say the second season is bad. It's just that it starts feeling a little like the cranks are turning mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and there's some issues with some of the mysteries. So Jason, tell me your
so a couple
secret
of insights
knowledge.
Actually. So that episode specifically,
the Troy one,
I think it's called The Rapes of Graff. So that episode was actually designed to set up season three. And so that's who the rapist is the big mystery of season three, first chunk. Season three is divided into like three different chunks. And so part of that was just to have the Arrested Development cameos, like the Michael Cera
right.
and Elias Shaka. But part of that is also to like leave that unresolved and just like set up Hearst as a place. So like you wind up seeing a few of those characters return in season three. So like that was really a table setting episode, which is one of the reasons it was such a boring and uneventful mystery. I think because it was trying to do too much. So one of the interesting things about season two, I don't know if it's like different writers or anything, but obviously it's not quite as tightly wound and as like perfectly constructed as season one, but there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that the obvious problem is that you know all the characters, as opposed to season one, where all the characters were new to you and they were all wrapped up in the same mystery. And so they could all be suspects. Like, you're the whole time, you're wondering,
yeah.
did Duncan do it? Did Logan do it? You can't really do that again.
I mean,
second
they keep
time.
Trying to do that in season two with the bus crash. Mm-hmm. They keep trying to be like, I don't know, what if it's Weevil? And you're like, uh-huh, is it though?
And you're like,
we know
no,
that guy.
Obviously,
like,
it's
what
not
are you
Weevil.
Doing?
Right, exactly. Well, that's the problem they had. And so, like, that's just inherently a problem with this type of show. And that's, I think, one of, well, yeah, I won't get into past season four stuff, but like that's something we can discuss more once you've seen all of season four. And then the second thing is that after season one, I saw this in an interview, Rob Thomas was like, we worked Kristen Bell to the bone. She was in every single scene. She was like working overtime. It was hard. It was impossible. It was unsustainable for her. So for this next season, we're going to try to give her a break a little bit. And so the way they did that was by creating the second ongoing mystery, which is who stabbed Felix on the bridge. And mm-hmm. that gave Logan and Weevil a lot more stuff to do and just allowed for a lot more scenes without Veronica in it, which I think is an interesting story, but also makes it all feel a lot more convoluted than it would. And so if you remember, I don't know if you're up to this episode, you probably are, that episode where Veronica like winds up getting all these dreams of the people who died on the bus. So that was them being like, well, time to ramp up the urgency on this bus crash mystery. Like, we need to get the train back on track. And it's actually like really good stuff, especially after that, after a little bit of meandering in the middle of season two. But yeah, they just had a problem just like keeping it all as one tight-knit mystery because of all those things. And so, and it wasn't nearly as just like well-crafted as the Lily Kane mystery, in which everything you saw pretty much every episode was just like
would
driving
like reveal
forward.
Something else. And you don't know where Logan stands for like basically the entire first season. And that's just not something you can maintain.
And season two also has a bunch of red herrings that just like wind up feeling pretty unsatisfying.
It's not like, it's not terrible though. It's a fun watch, and you know.
No, I love it. I think so. I rewatched, my wife and I rewatched one and two, and also obviously we watched four, and I thought two was fantastic. Like, obviously not as like top notch, stellar, like greatest of all time pantheon as season one of Veronica Mars, which I think is really incredible. But I thought season two was great. Also, I just really enjoyed it. It just felt like it has that same just Veronica Mars charm and style, and introduces. I mean, Tessa Thompson is fantastic in it.
She's great,
even though she does a sudden like personality turn out of nowhere in the middle of the season, which
listen,
is
teenagers
weird.
Do that, it's sure. fine.
sure. And the Steve Guttenberg as Mayor Woody Goodman is like this incredible unctuous character.
He's great.
And yeah, in the end, the finale, as you'll see, I guess you're not up to that yet, is like really jam-packed to the point where they jam so much stuff into it that you don't even have a second to breathe. But it's cool. It's really well done. And yeah, I have some issues with it that we can get into in the future. But yeah, it's I really enjoyed that season, I gotta say.
Cool.
Nice.
All right. That's enough Veronica Mars talk.
Yeah, should we? We'll table it for next week. Sure. Or whenever you finish season four, we can get into some real V-Mars spoilers. All right, Kirk, give us your music pick of the week.
Sure. So my music pick is from a musical that I'm guessing some of our listeners probably know about. This is Hadestown by the folk singer-songwriter N.I.S. Mitchell. And it's a kind of the new hot musical that a lot of people are talking about. a lot of people have been telling me, oh, it's so good, it's so good, it's so good, since I talked about Hamilton on Strong Songs, and I love Hamilton and love musicals in general. And the original cast recording for it came out just a couple weeks ago, so you can now listen to it.
And of course it has a video game connection.
It does, right? Because I had forgotten this, but then a couple people told me this recently. You told me also that Cliff Pleszinski is a producer of this musical, apparently. Uh-huh. Is that right? He's a producer?
The designer of Gears of War, of course. And the guy who announced Fortnite in 2011.
Yeah, and he is a producer of the show, apparently. So this musical is the story of Orpheus and the underworld, Orpheus and Eurydice and their love, and then also Persephone and Hades and all of that. But it's kind of told in this like train ride, depression era, jazz singer folk thing, like Dust Bowl folk with amazing singing. Oh man, it's
You've
so
seen
cool.
It,
so
or you just listened to the soundtrack?
Just listened to the recording, and I actually haven't listened to the whole thing, but I want to get it on people's radar because there's this one, two, at the very beginning of the show is just incredible. First off, the show starts with a solo trombone, just killing it. Like the trombone player is basically the bass and like lays on the bass line at the beginning. It's so good. But there's a 1-2 punch when Orpheus and Eurydice meet. And it's Come Home With Me is the first one. It's like really short. It's like when they first meet. And then Wedding Song is like the song they sing as he kind of shows her who he is and like sings this song for her. And she's like really cool. She has a really good song before that. Anyway, it's really good. I want to play a couple clips from that. So here's a clip from Come Home With Me. This is when their first meeting.
Come home with me.
Who are you?
The man who's gonna marry you. I'm Orpheus.
Is he always like this?
Yes.
I'm Eurydice.
Your name is like a melody.
A singer? Is that what you are?
I also play the lyre.
Oh, a lyre and a player too. I've met too many men like you.
Oh no, I'm not like that.
He's not like any man you've met. Tell her what you're working on.
I'm working on a song.
It isn't finished yet.
And this is a clip from Wedding Song when they're kind of like falling in love, or she's realizing who he is and that he's like the son of a muse and stuff, and they make a bunch of cool music together.
Lover, tell me if you can, who's gonna buy the wedding bands? Times being what they are, hard and getting harder all the time.
Lover, when I sing my song, all the rivers will sing along. They're gonna break their banks for us, and with their gold be generous. All the flashing in the pan, all to fashion for your hand. The river's gonna give us the wedding dance.
So it's really good, and I think you both should listen to it. Everyone should listen to it because, musicals are good. It just has that, I don't know. There's something about people speaking very clearly and like having a narrator interjecting. Like, so Hermes is the narrator and he's kind of in there all the time being like, this is who this person is. This is who this person is. Like, I really like this guy. Like, and he's just always weighing in and telling you what's going on. It has a really cool vibe to it. And I'm really into it. I'm psyched to listen to all of it and really take my time with it.
Yeah, I like it. I had listened to the concept album. It was a concept album, and then
yeah,
it became
been, like,
a musical.
Working on it forever, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I haven't actually gotten the chance to sit down and listen to the cast recording that just came out. So I'm
nice.
You've reminded me that I haven't yet done
nice.
That. So I'm going to do that.
That
after
would be.
This.
I'd be really curious to hear it. I know people have been following her doing this for
oh,
a
yeah.
long time.
And I really like the songs, and I know there's like mm-hmm. a few changes to them to the final mm-hmm. version that is, I think, on Broadway now. Like this,
it
it's
is,
done. It's like a done show, but they've done like previous iterations of the musical that were off mm-hmm. Broadway previously and changed some things. So
yeah,
I don't know.
It was
it's
like
been
in
cool
London maybe for a while
to see that process through YouTube clips that nerds post that I watch
yeah,
of
yeah.
the songs in progress. So yeah. It's
yeah.
cool.
I bet that's cool. I'll be curious what, like if you notice things they've changed, definitely let me know. Cause that's always a cool process. I think Hamilton was like a concept album too.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of these musicals start as concept albums.
Not shocking.
Eventually
yeah.
get, yeah, it totally makes sense.
It's almost like it's
it.
Really hard to write a musical
right.
and it takes
yeah,
like
who,
multiple
right,
tries.
Who starts out being
like
we're
going to
start with the choreography and the stage design and
yeah, no.
like write the
you
music.
You start with like an album and then
yeah, yeah.
go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool though. So yeah, man,
cool.
Hadestown, good stuff.
Cool. Well, I think that is it for this week's episode. And
yeah.
Yeah, we will all be back next week unless I suddenly have a baby. I could like disappear at any time. Really.
Wow.
That would be exciting.
Be
it's an exciting possibility.
Cool.
Yeah, because I think it's unlikely until like closer to within a couple of weeks of the due date. But like the due date is never exact. So could happen anytime. Did your sister, Maddie, give birth on due date? Or
she
before?
Gave birth after. For a first baby,
after.
It's usually not a premature baby usually
mm-hmm.
usually
yeah.
it's on or after the due date in that case, so you probably don't have to worry, but we'll see. Anything
yeah
could
I
happen.
Mean one of my good friends just had a baby. They actually came and visited with the baby on Sunday, which was cool. They just had a baby earlier this year and it was a month early.
Whoa.
But they think that the doctor might have like messed up the due date or something like that because
yeah
because
it's like
really
way off yeah,
yeah. Hmm. But yeah, I could be MIA at any time, so we shall see. All right, see you all next week, unless I don't.
All right, see you next week.
Bye.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Kirk Hamilton, Maddie Myers, and me, Jason Schreier. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mofidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR One, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen or email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
.com.